So I wanted to spend a little bit of time talking about a few more New Testament figures before moving on. So next slide. Timothy, of course, is the addressee of two of the New Testament epistles from the Apostle Paul, and a significant figure in the early church. He's from a town called Lystra. Paul and Barnabas visited Lystra on their first missionary journey. And of course, Paul was stoned there and left for dead outside the city gates. But on his second missionary journey, Paul went back there with Silas and found that there were indeed a significant group of Christians there. And a young man who was there named Timothy became part of Paul's traveling party from that point partway through what we think of as his second missionary journey. Timothy is significant. His mother, Eunice, and his grandmother, Lois, are both named in great respect by Paul. And so the pictures here, I've got an icon of Timothy, which is a relatively recent one, but it's interesting to me because he's pictured as a young man. And most of the iconic representations of first century church figures are old guys with gray beards. And most of the representations of Timothy show him in his 20s or 30s, maybe. And so even though we believe that he grew to a great age, he's associated as that young guy who went around with Paul. And so he still tends to be depicted that way. The picture on the right here is by Rembrandt, or at least somebody who is working out of Rembrandt's school. It may not have been by him personally, but it's called Timothy and His Grandmother. And so that's done in 1648, but it's a picture of Timothy and Lois. Timothy is given really kind of curly red hair in that depiction. And Lois is put in a high arched vaulted ceiling kind of a setting, which may or may not be anything that looks like what Lystra looks like. But and up at the top is a print from a British painter of the 19th century named Henry Lejeune called Timothy and Eunice, Timothy and his mother, which Lejeune specialized in paintings and imagery of particularly children and of a lot of biblical scenes. And so this is one of his works that became a print and was distributed very widely. And you know, his work is impactful in the 19th century era about thinking about people in the way that they lived a little bit in the first century. And it certainly makes Mom very pretty. So there's a nice nod to Eunice there. But Paul honors Eunice and Lois as very serious women of the faith, very serious Jewish women who were steeped in the scriptures and who, in what we think of as the Old Testament, and who invested very deeply in Timothy. Timothy was deeply trained in the scriptures, but not because he went to, you know, the school of Gamaliel like Paul did in Jerusalem, because he sat with his mother and his grandmother. And so he was trained by them, and Paul built on that foundation, but Paul deeply respected the foundation that Eunice and Lois had given Timothy, and deeply respected them as early believers in the church. Timothy's name is a Roman name. His father was Greek and doesn't figure much in the story. But when Paul returns in Acts chapter 16 to Lystra and Iconium, it is said that Timothy was very well respected by the people, the believers in both of these cities. So these are cities that aren't very far apart, but Paul or Timothy was not just a guy from Lystra. Apparently, he had traveled to Iconium and was well known in the church there. Paul elected to circumcise him because Timothy, his mother being Jewish, he was technically a Jew. The culture saw him as a Jew because he had a Jewish mother. And so Paul saw him being an uncircumcised Jew as a barrier to his effective ministry. And so we'll see contrast with that a little bit later. And Timothy left home and family for the hardships of the road and the pioneering ministry and to go and spent apparently very little time back in Lystra after that. We know that Timothy was sent to Thessalonica in 1 Thessalonians 3. Timothy, Paul talks about he is sending Timothy to encourage them. So he became an early emissary of Paul. During Paul's third missionary journey, Timothy is at Ephesus. It appears that he probably carried 1 Corinthians to Corinth, that letter. If he did not, he very shortly followed it because 1 Corinthians has the expectation that they will very soon have to interact with Timothy. He is listed as the co-author of Philippians, 2 Corinthians, Colossians, 1 Thessalonians, 2 Thessalonians, and Philemon. So he spent a lot of time with Paul, and Paul had a great respect for him. He was with Paul when he wrote Romans. So Paul sends greetings from Timothy when he writes Romans. He's writing to the church at Rome. And so Timothy was with Paul then. At the end of Paul's third missionary journey, as he heads for Jerusalem, Timothy is with him, but he leaves Timothy in Ephesus. And that's the place where Timothy falls out of the story in Acts. He's left at Ephesus, and Paul goes on to Jerusalem and is arrested and eventually taken to Rome. The two letters to Timothy, certainly 2 Timothy is much later than that. And so Timothy remained a very active part of Paul's ministry. And in 2 Timothy, Timothy is the guy that Paul is writing to me, and he says, "Come to me before spring." So Paul is anticipating that the end is near, and he is writing to Timothy. And he says, "Bring John Mark." But he says, "Come and bring John Mark." Very highly trusted by Paul, and eventually became rather like a son to Paul. He's the guy that Paul says, "I have no one like him." Out of all the guys I've discipled, out of all the guys who are part of my ministry, I have no one like him. So Paul's letters refer to Timothy 17 times. It's more than any other person that Paul refers to in his epistles. So in Hebrews, Timothy shows up in Hebrews chapter 13. So the author of Hebrews knows Timothy. The author of Hebrews says Timothy has recently been released. And perhaps will be coming to you. The author of Hebrews rejoices that Timothy has recently been released. Doesn't say from what or from where, but apparently Timothy had been arrested or imprisoned or something in some location, and the author of Hebrews was aware that Timothy had recently been released and wanted to pass that news along. It seems like Timothy was probably very reserved or somewhat timid. Paul, when he writes to the Corinthians, reminds them to put Timothy at ease when he comes, which Paul doesn't ever remind anybody else to do that for somebody who's coming to visit them. So Timothy, Paul says, do what you can to put him at ease when he comes. And of course, Paul directly exhorts Timothy to boldness. And apparently Timothy suffered some kind of intestinal problem or something like that, because Paul takes the time in writing to him to recommend that he take a little wine for his stomach. And who else does Paul ever provide that sort of personal advice to? So there's a closeness there. Timothy is believed to be the longtime pastor and leader of the church in Ephesus. Eusebius lists him as the first bishop of Ephesus. There's a lot of reasons to think that Timothy is Paul's most dependable man. Of all the young men that Paul discipled and made part of his ministry team, Timothy seems like the guy that he most depended upon, that he most trusted. There's a variety of traditions about what happened to Timothy at the end of his life, but there many of the traditions say something along the lines of he was killed when confronting some kind of a mob. That is, he did something very bold at the end of his life. That Paul, having exhorted him to boldness, eventually he did something very bold, and that resulted in his death. There is some tradition that he died around AD 97 in Macedonia, but he's not tied to any particular ministry in Macedonia. So most of the early sources agree that what really happened is he was stoned after preaching against idolatry, and point to around AD 75 at Ephesus. There is a document called the Acts of Timothy, which dates to at least the early 5th century. Might be earlier, it's hard to say. There's a lot of controversies back and forth about the Acts of Timothy as a document. But the Acts of Timothy claims to be from the Bishop of Ephesus in the 2nd century. So, and the Bishop of Ephesus in the 2nd century would be in an awfully good position to know things about Timothy because of Timothy's long service there less than a century before. In any case, the Acts of Timothy has a very detailed story that said in AD 97, when Timothy was 80 years old, that he was he confronted a pagan procession going through the streets of the city, which was celebrating Dionysius, the god of wine, and was subsequently dragged through the streets and then stoned to death. And so that has really influenced the church's story since then. But it's hard to know whether the Acts of Timothy really dates from the 2nd century. Most experts point to the 5th century as when it probably comes from. And there are no earlier copies of it or earlier references to it. So it's unknown for certain. The Acts of Timothy is actually a really interesting document because it has almost as much information about John at Ephesus as it does about Timothy, even though Timothy's in the title. And the Acts of Timothy is the document that gives us the story that it's John the Apostle that decided on the order of the four Gospels that you have in your Bible. That it was John sitting at Ephesus and confronted by people who brought him copies of Matthew, Mark, and Luke, who said, this is the order we should put them in. Matthew 1st and Mark 2nd and Luke 3rd, and that then this became the basis for John deciding to write a fourth gospel, and that John's fourth gospel was intended really as a result to do three things, which was to talk about the divinity of Christ in a way that the other three gospels really had not. And so that's a big piece of the motive of chapter 1 of the Gospel of John. And secondly, the other three gospels basically start Jesus' ministry around the time that John the Baptist is killed. And so John's gospel goes to great lengths to try to give us a picture of what did Jesus' ministry look like before John the Baptist was killed. Well, John the Baptist was still alive while he was baptizing at the River Jordan. What was Jesus doing then? So it is from John's gospel that we get most of the information that causes us to put Jesus' public ministry as probably about 3 years long, because the other three gospels would give you the sense that maybe Jesus' public ministry lasted only a year. John is the one that has the cycle of the Passover. The Passover keeps happening in John's gospel. The other gospels just have a Passover only once during the Passion Week. And then John, of course, puts a lot of extra material about the Passion Week in his story. And so that's a story from the Acts of Timothy, which may not actually be a second century document, but which claims to have inside information about things that happen at Ephesus. And of course, if we see both Timothy and John in Ephesus, we get a situation where Timothy is in Ephesus after the death of Paul, and shortly after that, John comes to Ephesus, and the two of them are there, engaged in ministry in Ephesus and through the province of Asia, across the other six cities that are part of the seven cities of Revelation, until Timothy's death, whenever that is. It appears that Timothy is probably killed by a mob before John dies, but that they would have overlapped for maybe three decades in their work and service at Ephesus. Timothy's relics were transferred from Ephesus to Constantinople in the 4th century. It's unclear where they would have been stored at Ephesus or how they would be identified by those who took them to Constantinople. In the early 4th century, they were removed from Constantinople by a royal figure from southern Italy who took them to a place called Termoli in Italy. And that's in the early 13th century. And he buried them in the cathedral at Termoli around 1239. And they were rediscovered in 1945 when the cathedral was renovated. So there's big gaps in the possession of whatever bones, et cetera, are regarded as the relics of Timothy. But there is a church in a place called Termoli, Italy, that claims to have the remnants of Timothy. So that's Timothy that we have two letters to, and he's an important person that was not an apostle, as far as we know, as far as we believe, although this icon says the apostle, and there are a lot of sources that would say the apostle Timothy, but there's no biblical source that says that Timothy was considered to be an apostle. So next slide. The guy that we think of with Timothy is Titus. Titus is also a guy who is a young pastor who is a key member of Paul's team and also not an apostle. The top right is an icon of Titus from the 14th century and from a church in what is now Kosovo. And the lower left is the ancient church of St. Titus at Gortina in Crete, which you can still go see. Titus is a Latin name. He was Greek by birth and from a pagan family, so really different from Timothy ethnically and culturally. He might have been from Antioch. There is some early tradition that he was a student of Greek philosophy and poetry when he met Paul and was converted to the faith. Paul, of course, circumcised Timothy and refused to circumcise Titus. And so he did so because he said, Timothy is Jewish, by birth because his mother is Jewish, and therefore if he is going to have a ministry to Jews, which he would be well suited for, he must be circumcised, or else the Jews will have nothing to do with him. Titus is born a Greek, is not really suitable for ministry to Jews, but he is suitable for ministries to Greeks and Romans and other people who are culturally outside of Judaism, and it would be foolish to circumcise him, because if he were circumcised, that would be a barrier in that ministry. And so this becomes a part of Paul's argument about how we should think about Judaism as a foundation for Christianity. Titus, of course, is the guy that when Paul goes to the Council of Jerusalem to get the rest of the apostles to weigh in on the fundamental issue of, do you have to be a Jew before you can become a Christian? Titus is the guy that he takes along and sort of puts out in front of everybody as Exhibit A. And they argue about Titus as a specific case, as a representative of the general case of non-Jewish people who are coming into the church, and to what extent do they need to become Jewish in any way. And Paul's argument is that they are not required to become Jews in order to become Christians, and that becomes the standard of the church. Titus is the guy that Paul sent to Corinth in AD 56 during the great upheavals and division the church in Corinth, and with the mission of bringing some peace in that congregation. He is the guy that carried the letter that Paul talks about in 2 Corinthians as the severe letter. We know that Paul wrote four letters to the church at Corinth. The one that we think of is 1 Corinthians is the second of the four letters, and the one that we think of is 2 Corinthians is the fourth of the four letters. The third letter was the severe letter, as Paul called it, and we don't have any text from that. We don't know what it said. But Titus is the guy that had to carry that letter, that very straight up difficult letter with stinging rebukes in it to Corinth, read that letter to the people, and then work with them to actually deal with these things and do these things. So Titus was a very trusted guy and given difficult tasks to do, because Paul himself had been very frustrated by dealing with the people in the church in Corinth. So when he sends Titus, you go do something about this, he's giving him a pretty serious task. He is also believed to have carried 2 Corinthians to Corinth. So he carried the severe letter and then came back, reported back to Paul, and Paul wrote 2 Corinthians and gave him that, and then he went back to Corinth with that. So he has a lot of association with the church at Corinth, but it's in the late 50s during this period of great division and turmoil in the church at Corinth where Titus is the troubleshooter. Titus is the guy who is stepping in to mediate the trouble, to try to troubleshoot the division, to try to get these people to work together for the sake of the gospel. Titus is the first bishop of Crete. Crete, the long, narrow east-west Greek island at the southern end of the Aegean Sea. Titus is greatly associated with ministry there. And in the letter to Titus, Paul's epistle to Titus, he tells him to go from church to church, from town to town, all the way across Crete, and appoint elders in every place. And so this is one of the very earliest specific appointments to the responsibilities of a bishop. And we see James the Just already having taken on that role in Jerusalem with the affirmation of all the apostles. But Titus is one of the first that is given the larger role of the responsibilities of a bishop with responsibilities over multiple churches across a geographic area and a responsibility to appoint leaders in each of those churches. And this is done while Titus is probably still not even maybe 40 years old. This is done while he is still a fairly young man, that he is given this very large responsibility in the church. But in terms of a documented instance of somebody fulfilling the role of a bishop, Titus is, with James the Just, among the very, very first that we see doing that. He was later sent to Dalmatia, the coast, the eastern coast of the Adriatic Sea, what is now mostly Croatia. Dalmatia was a major Roman province. And the Dalmatian coast, if you're not familiar, is just beautiful, just amazing. Lots of little inlets and lovely beaches and tremendously scenic. And so Romans viewed it as a sort of resort area and a great place to go and relax and get away from larger cities. Titus is in Dalmatia at the time of 2 Timothy, working the work of the ministry there. The city of, there's a city called Salona in Dalmatia, which was an early center of the church. And so very early on, the city of Salona becomes an important part of the life of the church and a center of ministry activity. And so it's possible that Titus's work in Dalmatia, he's the earliest person, the only New Testament person that we see going to Dalmatia and the earliest person that we know of carrying the gospel there. And so Titus has a significant role in the foundation of the church there, which became very prominent over the next couple of centuries. So Titus is remembered as a pastor, as a bishop, as a troubleshooter, as a peacemaker, and potentially as an administrator. It appears that he may have started with Paul as kind of Paul's secretary and keeper of stuff and traveling around with him. But Paul had tremendous respect for Titus and was more than willing to send him to do difficult things, believing that he would be effective in doing that. The consensus is that he died in Gortina in Crete, which is near the current city of Heraklion, in either AD 96 or maybe AD 107. And so that he had perhaps ministered in Crete for more than 30 years, 35 years or more. The Church of St. Titus in Heraklion, Greece, on Crete, currently holds what it says is the skull of Titus, which they believe that they got from Venice, where it had been hidden from the Turks during the time that of the Turkish threat to an occupation of Crete. But Titus is a significant New Testament figure and an important figure as a guy who made a mark getting people aligned and together working for the sake of the gospel. The church at Corinth has an early founding. You've got Aquila and Priscilla have been displaced from Rome and they have come to Corinth as they're working as tent makers there. They are a part of the founding story of the church at Corinth. Corinth is this huge crossroads between the east and the west, and so much stuff passes through there, and also between the north and the south, between Athens and the northern parts of Greece and Macedonia. Corinth was this sea town, all these sailors and all these people passing through, huge economic stuff coming and going. Aquila and Priscilla come there, and they're associated with the very beginnings of the church there. Paul passes through, and so Paul later says, I planted, and Apollos passes through, the great preacher, and Apollos watered, but God gave the growth. There's early impact from the Apostle Paul there, from Apollos the great preacher. Peter passes through there, such that when Paul's writing to them in 1 Corinthians, he's talking about the people that are loyal to Peter and the people that are loyal to Paul and the people that are loyal to Apollos and the fact that they can't get along. And so Paul sends Titus there. So there's a lot of people with fingers on the church at Corinth, but there's not very much sense of how was the church organized in the early part of the story. Stephanus is a figure that shows up at the beginning and ends of 1 Corinthians, so he had a significant role in that church, and he was trusted by the various factions. He's the guy who led their delegation to go try to resolve their problems and get outside input there. Erastus is a figure at the church at Corinth. Erastus is the guy who was sort of the city treasurer. He was the Adele. The Adele is a job that you competed for and was voted on by prominent citizens. And it was, some people call it the city treasurer, other people call it the director of public works. But it's a very responsible position, and Romans saw it as a point of great honor to be appointed to this position. Erastus was appointed the Adele in Corinth around the time he apparently joined the church. And so he's this very prominent figure in the local government who is part of that church, and is believed to have had significant ministry afterwards, but nothing specific is known about that. And so Erastus is another figure. So the church at Corinth, there's a lot of big personalities and a lot of people passing through, but there's not much evidence that there's early organization there, the appointment of specific elders, that sort of thing. And so maybe that's part of the problem that they had at Corinth, is it's not clear that there was any early specific setup of leadership. And Corinth was a big city, so they probably had more than one house church from very early on. And that's probably part of the reason that there was so much division. If people were going to church at different people's houses, and it became different kinds of clubs, and there wasn't a lot of unity between them. So Titus, when he went there, had to step into that. So those are just a few things about the church at Corinth, but we don't really know. There's not a lot of knowledge about that. A guy named Ben Witherington, who is a very good scholar of the first century, has written a book called, it's part of a series, but it's called A Day in the Life of the Church at Corinth. And it tries to give you a sense of what it was like to live in the midst of these personalities and some of the challenges and conflict that went on there, and what the city was like and the people within it were like.